You're listening to the Douglas Jacoby Podcast. Here we bring you some of the material found on Douglas's website in podcast form. We hope that as you listen, you are challenged to think about faith. Today, Douglas continues his series on the imitation of Christ.
Now looking at over-anxiety, holy examples.
For more on this episode, follow the link in the show notes to Douglas's website. Now here's today's teaching.
Hello, this is devotion number 17 from our series on the imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis. We'll have two selections. One comes out of book three, and in the modern book I'm using, they call it On Committing Our Cause to Christ, but A. Kempis called it Not Becoming Overly Anxious in Our Affairs. Those are connected. We know that, don't we, from our experience, anxiety and commitment. The second reading comes from book one on the holy examples before us. The first one is a kind of a dialogue. You know, it's Christ talking to the disciple and back and forth. And that second reading is just an exhortation from the disciple. I hope you'll find this very practical. Let's begin. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you your heart's desires. Psalm 37:4. Christ, my friend, always commit your cause to me. I will bring it to fulfillment at the right time. Wait for me to orchestrate all the details, and then you will be rewarded. Disciple, O Lord, freely and completely I commit all things to you, for my own planning gains me little. I wish I did not obsess on future events, but that I could offer myself completely to your pleasing will without delay. Christ, my friend, often people relentlessly strive after something they desire, but when they obtain it, they've already moved on to another goal. The desires are not lasting, and they rush from one thing to another. So it's not really a small thing when you surrender to me in small things. The disciple, true progress lies in self-denial. People who deny themselves are free and safe. But our enemy, the opponent of all good things, never ceases from temptation, but day and night sets his trap so he can catch those who are unaware. Keep watch and pray so that you will not give in to temptation. Just a couple thoughts on this excerpt. It's the way that I relate personally to the disciple. You know, Jesus says, commit our cause to him and he'll work out the details. I'm a details person. Now, maybe you're fortunate enough not to be wired that way. Or maybe you're fortunate enough to have someone else who handles the details for you. It's interesting when he prays, Lord, freely, completely, I commit all things to you. I wish I did not obsess on future events. I'm always thinking about the future. He also is told by Christ, you know, you reach a goal. I hope you reach a goal, but you don't really get the full benefit or the encouragement because by then you're on to another goal. And I'm certainly wired that way myself. I finish one project or one book or one podcast and without even taking a moment to enjoy whatever the accomplishment is, I'm working on something else. It seems like everything I accomplish, I'm just reminded there are more things I could have accomplished. Maybe I do a talk and the talk goes well, but I know it wasn't perfect, and so I'm not satisfied. And there's something about being in the present, being in the moment, which is very biblical and not just obsessing about the future. Oh, I've got a number of practical things I'll mention once we go through the other section. But that was the first reading, not being overly anxious in our affairs. And I feel like I'm a low anxiety person. That is, I have low blood pressure. I'm not easily phased. I'm not easily offended. But on the other hand, I'm so wrapped up in the details. Yeah, maybe if I didn't do that, I would feel anxiety. Well, maybe you are feeling that this reading applies to you, or maybe not. Let's check out the next one. Okay. The scripture reading is Hebrews 12:1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. Now, let's hear the exhortation of the disciple. Let us look to the vibrant examples of holy men and women throughout history, in whom shone the perfection of Christ. Compared to them, we do little or nothing to imitate Christ. They served our Lord in hunger and thirst, while cold and poorly dressed, working until they were exhausted. In spiritual disciplines and fasting, in prayer and holy meditation, and in persecution and insults. Well, here, Akempis is asking us to look at Christian history. You know, just as we can look at the Old Testament and find many examples of faith, we can also find many men and women who do not live by faith. The same is also true of Christian history. We can learn it's not all bad any more than it's all good. And there are vibrant examples, as he puts it. Continuing, the apostles, church founders, those who suffered for confessing their faith, those who died for not denying their faith, and all those who walked in the footsteps of Christ, all loved their eternal souls more than they loved their physical lives. So now he's expanding this. It's not just Christians, the illustrious Christians we've all heard of. It's everybody, the church founders, the apostles, martyrs, and confessors. I try not to be too nitpicky, too critical when I read books. Here he talks about loving their eternal soul. That was the view of the church in the day of Akempis, and it's probably the view of many of you hearing this. I would dispute that our souls are not eternal. That's in Greek philosophy, yes, the soul's eternal. But in the Bible, no, we're actually mortal. But we will be clothed with immortality if we're in Christ. At any rate, they love their souls more than their lives. Continuing, some went so far as to live alone in the desert. But all suffered severe temptations and were attacked by the enemy. They offered frequent and fervent prayers unto God. They observed the discipline of fasting with passionate zeal and strong desire for spiritual life. They offered themselves to God. They bravely disciplined themselves against sinful acts and thoughts so they could become masters over evil. Completely and faithfully, they sought after God. By day, they labored in the world, and at night, spent their time in prayer. Even as they went about their daily duties, they prayed mentally throughout the day. We'll pause again. That continuance of duties while praying throughout the day reminds me of our podcast on Brother Lawrence, quite similar. But we have the frequent and fervent prayer. So he's mentioning a number of different areas where we can learn. And he's not saying, here's a list of seven things you should do. What the purpose of this meditation is to point us to others who've done it, who can inspire us. And we need people like that in our lives. And I understand some of the people in your life, they had an impact on you, but they've moved on. Maybe they live somewhere else. Maybe you move far away. But there can still be an impact, just as people like Thomas Akempis can impact us, even though he's been dead for many, many centuries. So we can learn from examples in church history. We can learn from examples, hopefully, in our own local fellowship, people who've brought us to Christ, other people who are in a position of influencing others. And that's so important. We're not designed to be Christians all alone. We're not designed to bear the burdens alone or to hold in our true heart. We're supposed to be open and sharing, confessing our sin, learning from others. And this is very much the kind of person, it seems to me, that Thomas Akempis was. Oh, I love the next section. Again, he's speaking of these faithful Christians. He says, they did not waste a minute of time, but spent every moment thinking of how they could use what they were currently doing to serve God. Sometimes they even forgot to eat and rest. Well, I know you can find a passage that's very similar, referring to the Apostle Paul. I'm thinking of 2 Corinthians 6. I'm thinking of Jesus in Mark 6. But this idea of not wasting a minute of time sounds so modern. We know that in the 1400s, people didn't look at the clock the way we do. They didn't time everything, but they had bells, and they were church bells that told them what the hour was. But I don't want us to interpret this in a neurotic, kind of obsessive way. They didn't waste a minute of time, but more in the sense of responsible Christian stewardship. All of our time is God's time. And so we should ask the question, am I wasting time? Downtime is not always wasted time, though. I just make that, it might have been a funny qualification to make in the 1400s. You know, they'd say, what is downtime? What do you mean? When you're down, what is that? But we live in such a crazy society, such a frenetic pace in most places that we need downtime. Let me continue. They gave up all riches, dignities, honors, and friendships with the world. They desired nothing from the world but only the bare necessities of life. Although in appearance they were poor in earthly things, they were rich above measure in grace, virtue, and heavenly blessings. You know, in the history of the church, usually those who've done the most, who had the greatest influence, were not the rich. They were not powerful people in society. They were rich, but not that way, not in material things. They were rich in virtue. Our society is so sick and twisted now, we don't even talk about virtue and vice anymore. Well, the phrase vice squad, I think, is continued. That's used, that word vice. But normally, virtue and vice, virtue is almost never heard. We don't talk about right and wrong. We talk about values. It's so slippery. What do you value? Maybe it's not what I value. That's our modern world. But these were rich above measure in grace, virtue, and heavenly blessings. They were strangers to the world, but were welcomed as family and friends with God. In the world's eyes, they had no status or popularity, but in the sight of God, they were precious and loved. This makes me think of the Apostle Paul. It makes me think of Jesus himself. No status or popularity, but in the sight of God, they're precious and loved. They stood firm in true humility, lived in simple obedience, walked in love and patience, and so grew strong in spirit and obtained favor before God. They are given to us as an example. They should motivate us to live to please Christ and flee the lukewarm life of the world. Flee the lukewarm life of the world. In the beginning, Alkempis says, all those starting out on a spiritual journey are faithful in prayer, desirous of a holy life, eager to follow a strict discipline of devotion. Unfortunately, many become careless in their travel and lose their fervency. They may stop altogether, considering themselves reverent and holy simply because they're not sinning publicly. Okay, what is it that Thomas is criticizing here? What is he responding to? Well, on the one hand, he sees that when people come to faith, they often have great passion. They have many dreams to accomplish great things. And they're willing, at least for a while, to submit to some kind of discipline, some kind of regimen. But unfortunately, he notes, many become careless in their travel. I think he's talking about traveling through life, our journey, you know, that kind of travel. And some even think, well, because I'm not, you know, doing gross sins in public, I'm better than so-and-so. That's the point where we're simply comparing ourselves to other lukewarm people. And he hates the thought that that would be where any of us ends up. So let me read the final paragraph, and then I'll highlight some of those practicals. Finally, he says, we live in cold and complacent times, so that it is too easy to cool from fervent desire for Christ to casual lukewarmness. Wake up. Follow the example of godly witnesses who lived holy lives. That is a great paragraph. It reminds me especially of the book of Hebrews. Hebrews 6:12, because of what it says about laziness and overcoming that through imitating faithful people. And also Hebrews 11, what is called the Hall of Fame of Faith. These are all figures in the Old Testament time or the intertestamental period, people who persevered, even though they never received fully the reward that they were seeking. So it's a biblical theme, learning from others, learning from the past. I'd like to read that last paragraph once more. We live in cold and complacent times. Wow. You know, the 1420s, that was a difficult time. You know, actually, the 1820s were challenging, and the 2020s as well, right? What's the difference? We're still humans. We live in cold and complacent times, so it's too easy to cool from fervent desire for Christ to casual lukewarmness. Wake up. Follow the example of godly witnesses who lived holy lives. Okay, what are the areas? Well, he's mentioned them already. Let me highlight frequent and fervent prayers. Okay, not just a quick prayer once a day, but frequent, fervent prayers. The discipline of fasting. Thirdly, strong measures to avoid sin, discipline measures. What are our measures? If you use a computer, do you use it privately or publicly? Do your kids have computers in their bedrooms? Are they getting into trouble on the internet? It could be pornography, it could be gambling, it could be shopping, it could be almost anything. But we need to take measures to avoid sin. And if you go to my website, you'll see the link to Covenant Eyes. It's like a software protection kind of program to keep us pure. A fourth area Kempis mentions is at work, being good workers vocationally, whatever your job is. We don't just do it and try to get home and do the minimum, but we're bearing witness to Christ even on the job. He mentions, fifthly, evenings devoted to the Lord. So it's not just working in the day, but the evening is also Christ's. So we shouldn't say, well, that's my time. Well, get the rest you need, but all time is Christ's. So frequent and fervent prayers, the discipline of fasting. Are we doing that? I'm encouraged because next month in our church, we're going to have encourage people to fast for a few weeks. What a great thing to do, and biblical. Measures to avoid sin, good workers vocationally, evenings devoted to the Lord, mental prayer throughout the day, not just silent prayer. And the day of a Kempis, most people would have prayed verbally, orally, that is. You would hear someone praying, but he's encouraging mental prayer. Avoiding time wasting and not striving for honors. Oh, well, we live in a society that's all about prizes. Olympic gold. You're a writer? How about the Pulitzer Prize? How about the Heisman Trophy? How about being referenced and quoted in publications or recognized in the workplace? How about a Nobel Prize? I mean, we have honors, we have degrees, certificates, diplomas, all kinds of things. And Kempis is saying we shouldn't strive for those. Now, I would say it's not that they're wrong, but if we're not truly doing it for God, and sadly many winners of these prizes, they're not doing it for God, and it becomes obvious, then they're wrong. Then it's not right. So he mentions even a couple other areas. Renouncing carelessness, realizing that those who, let me put it in my words, people who are zeros in the eyes of the world may actually be heroes in the sight of God. And of course, he encourages us to wake up. That's the meditation for today. May God bless you as you go throughout the day. Tomorrow, we'll be having a devotion on the guard of humility and on thinking humbly of oneself. So we will return to that recurring theme of humility. Thanks for listening. Have a terrific day. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed Douglas's series on the imitation of Christ.
For additional notes and resources, be sure to check out Douglas's website in the show notes. The website has hundreds of articles, podcasts, and videos for you to access for free. You can also become a premium subscriber and gain access to thousands of online resources from Douglas's teaching ministry. Thanks again for listening.